Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. Happy May Day. I'm your reader, Mary Frances, and you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Looking on the front page of the Sioux City Journal today, there's a large photo of storm clouds over Grand View Park in Sioux City on Tuesday. And the copy reads, April capped off with stormy skies in northwest Iowa, and May is likely to begin the same way. Areas around Remsen, Iowa had reports of hail ranging from the size of quarters to nickels, dimes, and peas Tuesday afternoon as turbulent weather passed through northwest Iowa, according to reports received by the National Weather Service in Sioux Falls. The Sioux City Metro was under a tornado watch most of the day Tuesday, with alternating bands of very dark clouds, lighter clouds, peaks of sunshine, and blue skies. All of this activity is tied to a larger low-pressure system that's moving through the area, said Peter Rogers, a warning coordination meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Sioux Falls. And then we're also expecting a cold front to sweep across the region as well at the surface. So those two things combined are kind of the focus areas for this particular system and the thunderstorms that are going to result because of it. Thunderstorms are forecast in Sioux City and surrounding areas for Wednesday and Thursday. A stronger downpour is expected Thursday, with more than an inch of rain possible during the morning hours. Overall, we continue to remain in this wetter pattern that we've seen over the past couple of weeks throughout the remainder of this week, Rogers said. The month of April also marked the first tornadoes in northwest Iowa this year. A series of five brief tornadoes touched down in Plymouth, Sioux, and Lyon counties in a system that traveled northward the afternoon of April 16. No injuries were reported with any of the tornadoes. The first touched down north of Hinton at 1:46 p.m. Because it touched down in a field and caused no damage, it was rated an EFU, according to National Weather Service data. The EF tornado rating scale uses damage as a yardstick, and if a tornado touches down in an area where there's little to be damaged, it often receives an EFU rating. With an EFU rating, wind speed is not estimated. The second touched down northwest of Lamar's at 1:58 p.m. It was rated an EF1, with peak wind speeds around 100 miles an hour. It traveled approximately 1.32 miles northeast. An outbuilding was destroyed and trees were damaged. A third tornado occurred briefly in rural Sioux County, 2 miles south of Struble. That happened at 2:11 p.m. It was rated an EFU. There was no damage. The fourth tornado touched down 2 miles northwest of Sioux Center at 2:28 p.m. This short-lived tornado, designated an EF0, which is the lowest rating other than EFU, produced winds of 85 miles an hour and traveled northeast for less than a mile. A barn collapsed and some trees were damaged. The fifth and final tornado touched down at the Otter Valley Country Club near George, Iowa. Rated an EF1, this tornado had peak wind speeds of around 100 miles an hour. A narrow path of damage occurred on the Otter Valley Golf Course and a nearby farmstead. Our next story, Iowa advocates expect another push for pesticide tort protections next year. And it shows a photo of a tractor spraying a soybean field in 2013. A proposal to prohibit lawsuits over warning labels on pesticides, if the product already has a qualifying warning label, sparked a debate this year at the Iowa Capitol about the role of pesticides in crop production, on the state's economy, and on the public health of Iowa farmers. The proposed legislation ultimately failed to gain sufficient support among Iowa lawmakers to pass into law this year. The topic is likely to return to the legislative agenda in 2025. The bill was proposed by the pesticide manufacturer Bayer, which has multiple crop science plants in Iowa. Bayer makes the glyphosate-based herbicide Roundup and has faced lawsuits nationwide from individuals claiming the company failed to warn consumers, of the potential health risks of the weed killer. Jeffs Christensen, the head of crop science and sustainability communications for Bayer, said on Monday that she hopes to continue the discussion with Iowa lawmakers in 2025. She said the resources Bayer must devote to defending Roundup from lawsuits is not sustainable for the company. Quote, "It's not a sustainable business model for us, so we are looking at various strategies to figure out how do we really keep important tools such as Roundup on the market for farmers," she said. "We really want to do everything we possibly can to make sure that there's access to these tools for farmers. So we're going to continue, and that's one of the reasons we want to continue the dialogue." The legislative proposal, Senate File 2412, passed the Iowa Senate on a 30-19 vote that was mostly party line, with only Republicans supporting and 4 Republicans joining all Democrats in voting against. The proposal did not receive any legislation attention in the Iowa House. Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican from New Hartford, said recently on Iowa PBS's Iowa Press show that the debate over the bill was, quote, "difficult. It's a very difficult issue trying to decide where to land on that," Grassley said on the Iowa Press show. Grassley went on to express concern with how the lawsuits are impacting Bayer and its facilities in Iowa. Quote, "I think you've seen some of the impacts it has had on Bayer as a company. We have to realize it is having an impact, and the largest facility they have in the creation of Roundup is in Iowa," Grassley said. "So the question gets back to me is where do we want to source our things within agriculture? It could be Roundup or this herbicide in this instance. It could be something else some other time. I just don't want us to become more dependent on something that's not produced here in Iowa or in America and have to look at other countries, maybe even some that are unfriendly, to produce these products," unquote. Roundup has received significant scrutiny over health claims and its link to the development of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. About 165,000 cancer claims have been brought in the United States against Bayer over exposure to the weed killer, according to a report by Reuters. Many were resolved as part of a $9.6 billion settlement in 2020, but about 54,000 remain. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency found that glyphosate is unlikely to be a human carcinogen and that there are no risks of concern to human health when used in accordance with its current label. However, a U.S. appeals court ordered the agency to reconsider those findings in 2022. A World Health Organization cancer agency in 2015 found that glyphosate was likely capable of causing cancer, but European Union regulators have determined there was not sufficient evidence for that finding. Iowa has the fastest growing rate of new cancers in the nation and the second highest cancer rate overall. Physicians and public health professionals have said it's time to look more closely at how Iowa's agriculture might be contributing. Opponents of the proposed legislation expressed concern that it would strip Iowans of a legal avenue to challenge pesticide manufacturers over adverse health effects caused by prolonged exposure to pesticides. Critics contended that such a bill would leave Iowa farmers without legal recourse. Supporters of the bill argued that it is limited in scope, that it would prohibit only lawsuits over labeling once a product meets its labeling requirements from federal regulators. The Iowa Farm Bureau, Iowa Corn Growers Association, and Iowa Association of Business and Industry are among the Iowa groups that registered in support of the bill, according to state lobbying records. A multi-state coalition of ag groups that supports legal protection for glyphosate also includes the Iowa Soybean Association. The Gazette was unable to obtain a comment on the legislation from the Iowa Farm Bureau or the Iowa Corn Growers Association, who deferred to Bayer for comment. The groups who lobbied against the proposal this year include organizations that represent attorneys and environmental groups. Similar legislative proposals have been introduced in Missouri and Idaho. Next story from the front page. Sioux City Cultural Inclusion Liaison settles lawsuit with USD. And this is from Dolly Butts. The City of Sioux City's Cultural Inclusion Liaison, who is currently serving as an indefinite suspension, has settled a sex discrimination lawsuit that she filed against a former employer. The South Dakota Board of Regents and the University of South Dakota agreed, quote, without any admission of liability, unquote, to pay Semahar Gebrekidan, that's last name is Gebrekidan, they agreed to pay her $100,000 according to a settlement agreement obtained by the journal. The amount includes over $10,000 in back pay and nearly $25,000 to cover her attorney fees, according to the document. In exchange, she agreed to settle the lawsuit and sign a release February 12. Gebrekidan, who served as an international student advisor for USD's international office between June 22, 2018 and June 21, 2019, filed the suit in U.S. District Court January 1, 2022. According to the lawsuit, she was placed on administrative leave and told her contract would not be renewed on or about May 14, 2019, roughly a month after a Title IX investigation against USD had been closed due to, quote, a lack of substantial evidence, unquote. The lawsuit claimed that on or about December 10, 2018, a senior secretary of the USD International Office was having a conversation with an international student about modesty in her presence. During that conversation, the secretary allegedly told her that, quote, sometimes you wear those super short skirts and tights, and I get the Me Too movement and all, but sometimes you're just asking for it, the secretary said. The victim interpreted the secretary's comments to mean she was somehow asking to be sexually assaulted because of her outfit, according to the lawsuit. The next day, the lawsuit alleged she overheard a conversation between that secretary and her supervisor, during which the two were discussing the way she behaved and dressed in the office. The secretary commented that she had been, quote, dressing like a whore, unquote, and was, quote, doing inappropriate things with students, unquote, according to the lawsuit, which stated the secretary viewed her hugging an international student as, quote, culturally insensitive, unquote. On or about December 12, 2018, she reported the conversation that she overheard to USD's Title IX coordinator. Quote, the delay in conducting Semahar's six-month evaluation, placing Semahar on a 60-day improvement plan, placing her on administrative leave, and refusing to renew her contract were all done in retaliation for Semahar pursuing an investigation under Title IX, unquote, the lawsuit stated. Semahar came to USD from South Dakota State University, where she earned undergraduate and master's degrees and worked in a variety of diversity, equity, and inclusion positions. Before coming to work for the City of Sioux City, she was employed as an HIV case manager at Siouxland Community Health Center. In 2021, she was named Sioux City's first ever community inclusion liaison. City officials and council members have said little publicly about her recent paid suspension, which went into effect on February 21st. The suspension is tied to an ongoing investigation concerning, quote, violations of city work rules, according to an internal memo obtained by the journal. Semahar, who has been employed with the city since 2021 and currently oversees the Inclusive Sioux City Advisory Committee, reports to the city manager's office and is not a department head. City Attorney Nicole Dubois said, personnel matters are confidential, and quote, the city is prohibited from commenting. Dubois also denied multiple open records requests concerning Semahar's suspension, which were made by the journal under the Freedom of Information Act. Mayor Bob Scott previously said Semahar has hired an attorney, so the city council doesn't, quote, have the privilege or opportunity to say anything in the public about that. And turning to page 2 under local, creators say TikTok ban would be devastating. To most people, she's Jen Rowray. That's Rowray. But to more than 170,000 TikTok followers, she's known as @CowboyJen. The self-described, quote, older Midwest butch lesbian who isn't a cowboy but does have the horse in the hat, unquote, is a parent and storyteller who has used the social media platform to build community and share short videos with the aim of helping to spread hope and happiness, quote, to young lesbians and young butch lesbians struggling with isolation and not knowing where to go. With my TikTok, I want to show young lesbians that I'm able to live a happy, healthy life in rural Iowa, she said. I'm able to show that you don't have to live in a big city to have that life. Rowray was among four Iowa TikTok creators who gathered Tuesday for a discussion hosted by the social media platform's safety leaders to discuss how they got their start on TikTok and how they built their communities and expanded their business on the platform and what impact a TikTok ban could have. Quote, I'm not going to leave the platform until they drag me kicking and screaming, Rowray told reporters. I will not use the platform if it's taken over by another company, honestly, because I would have to rebuild that trust. It becomes a completely separate platform at that point. TikTok is just too good. It's too accessible to so many people. It's extremely accessible, she said. She was joined by Susie Loftus, who is head of trust and safety for U.S. data security at TikTok. TikTok users likely have seen videos of the former prosecutor and lawyer appearing regularly in their feed about how the Chinese-owned company is safeguarding American data. TikTok has roughly 170 million American users. That's about half the population of the United States. In Iowa, the company boasts 1.2 million users, including 39,000 Iowa businesses that use the social media app to grow their customer base. Tuesday's discussion in Cedar Rapids comes roughly a week after Congress passed and President Joe Biden signed into law a measure that would force the social media platform's Chinese parent company to divest from its U.S. operations or face a nationwide ban. Quote, so we're going to different communities to sort of tell the story of how Americans are connecting with each other on TikTok, Loftus said. There's really great stories to tell here in Iowa about how people are using the platform, she said. TikTok's critics, which include Republican U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson of Marion, argue that the app could put U.S. customer data at risk because Chinese law requires China's companies to share information with the government. TikTok maintains that it operates independently and protects U.S. data through a partnership with Texas-based tech company Oracle that allows U.S. user data to be stored on Oracle's cloud. Oracle acts as the data center for U.S. TikTok users. While TikTok is owned by ByteDance, Loftus said it is a global company with headquarters in Los Angeles and Singapore, 13 offices across the United States, and almost 7,000 U.S. employees. She noted that three of the company's five board of directors are U.S. citizens, and 60% of its ownership is by global investors. Founders and employees each own about 20%, she said. So there are no ties with communist China. Our ownership is largely by Americans and American investors, Loftus said. The new law gives ByteDance 9 months, or potentially up to a year, to find an approved buyer for TikTok. If it fails to do so, TikTok would be banned from U.S. app stores. Quote, if TikTok truly cared about supporting American businesses and entrepreneurs, they would cut ties with communist China-controlled ByteDance, Hinson said in a statement. She co-led a bipartisan effort to force TikTok to divest from its parent company, quote, so Americans can use this app safely, unquote. TikTok is expected to argue that a forced sale could violate its users' free speech rights because a new owner could change the app's content policy and reshape what users are able to freely share. Rowray and other TikTok content creators said they are worried about the platform's future, that has enabled them to grow their businesses and build communities. Kali Atherton Bout, that's B-O-U-T-T-E, bought Prairie Patch Farm, her late uncle's 50-acre wildlife preserve, located just outside Cedar Rapids, in 2018. She said she did all she could to continue her uncle's legacy. But after multiple failed attempts to promote the business, she turned to TikTok to show off the farm's charm and its 11 llamas. Prairie Patch Farm found quick and steady success and became a destination through TikTok videos of dressing up the llamas and showcasing the unusual experiences available at the farm. Now, with more than 166,000 followers, millions of likes, and a budding global following, At Prairie Patch Farm has evolved from a promotional account into feel-good content. Quote, TikTok has given me the opportunity to talk about nature preservation in Iowa and my small business on a global scale, she said. She said about 30% of her customers are from TikTok. Quote, people are suffering more than ever under the crunch of inflation, depression, drug, and alcohol use. And if one of my llamas can put a wig on and change somebody's day, yeah, I mean, I think it's absolutely concerning, she said. And I agree with First Amendment concerns. You know, we have these other platforms. Why aren't they being targeted? Linda Tong of Des Moines started her business as a junior in college, making handsome planners for herself and her friends. Through her TikTok videos, she amassed thousands of followers at Linda Tong Planners, earning her a grant to purchase her first round of inventory. She's now focused on her business full-time and has built a strong community of returning customers on TikTok. Quote, I've had customers who have supported my business and my art since 2020. If TikTok were to go away, I would lose that loyal customer base. It would be hard to replace, Tong said. Hinson, speaking last week to the Gazette, said the goal is not a ban, but a forced divestiture by ByteDance because of concerns that top Chinese government officials have access to American users' data and could use it to manipulate TikTok's algorithm to sow divisiveness and discord in the United States. Quote, this is not about eliminating your platform or your ability to get your message out, she said. This is about making sure that Americans' data is protected. I think we can have both, and I think that this bill does that balance, she said. And here's a related TikTok story from the E-Edition Plus. What a TikTok ban could mean for you. Worried about using the app or a workaround? Here's what to know. No, TikTok will not suddenly disappear from your phone, nor will you go to jail if you continue using it after it is banned. After years of attempts to ban the Chinese-owned app, including by former President Donald Trump, a measure that could ban the popular video-sharing app in the U.S. recently won congressional approval. President Joe Biden signed it April 24. The measure gives Beijing-based parent company ByteDance 9 months to sell the company, with a possible additional 3 months if a sale is in progress. If it doesn't, TikTok will be banned. So what does this mean for you, a TikTok user, or perhaps the parent of a TikTok user? Here are some key questions and answers. First, when does the ban take effect? The original proposal gave ByteDance just 6 months to divest from its U.S. subsidiary. Negotiations lengthened it to 9. Then, if the sale is already in progress, the company will get another 3 months to complete it. So it would be at least a year before the ban goes into effect. But with likely court challenges, this could stretch even longer, perhaps even years. TikTok has seen some success with court challenges in the past, but has never sought to prevent federal legislation from going into effect. Next question. What if I already downloaded it? TikTok, which is used by more than 170 million Americans, most likely will not disappear from your phone, even if an eventual ban does take effect. But it would disappear from Apple and Google app stores, which means that users would not be able to download it. This would also mean that TikTok would not be able to send updates, security patches, and bug fixes, and over time, the app likely will become unusable, not to mention a security risk. Next question, are there workarounds? Teenagers are known for circumventing parental controls when it comes to social media, so dodging the U.S. government's ban is certainly not outside the realm of possibilities. For instance, users could try to mask their location using a VPN or virtual private network, use alternative app stores, or even install a foreign SIM card into their phone. But some tech savvy is required, and it's not clear what will and won't work. Most likely, users will migrate to another platform, such as Instagram, which has a TikTok-like feature called Reels, or YouTube, which has incorporated vertical short videos in its feed to try to compete with TikTok. Often, such videos are taken directly from TikTok itself, and popular creators are likely to be found on other platforms as well. The TikTok bill relies heavily on the control that Apple and Google maintain over their smartphone platforms, because the bill's primary mechanism is to direct Apple and Google to stop allowing the TikTok app on their respective app stores, said Dean Ball, who is a research fellow with the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. He continues, such a mechanism might be much less effective in the world envisioned by many advocates of antitrust and aggressive regulation against the large tech firms, unquote. Next question, should I be worried about using TikTok? Lawmakers from both parties, as well as law enforcement and intelligence officials, have long expressed concerns that Chinese authorities could force ByteDance to hand over data on the 170 million Americans who use TikTok. The worry stems from a set of Chinese national security laws that compel organizations to assist with intelligence gathering, which ByteDance would likely be subject to, and other far-reaching ways the country's authoritarian government exercises control. Data privacy experts say, though, that the Chinese government could easily get information on Americans in other ways, including through commercial data brokers that sell or rent personal information. Lawmakers and some administration officials also expressed concerns that China could direct or influence ByteDance to suppress or boost TikTok content favorable to its interests. TikTok, for its part, has denied assertions that it could be used as a tool of the Chinese government. The company also said it has never shared U.S. user data with Chinese authorities and will not do so even if asked. And that's about the halfway point of today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. Now let's take a look at our obituaries. Jean Bertram, 81 years old, of Ireton, passed away Saturday, April 27, at the Hillcrest Healthcare Services in Hawarden. Funeral service, Thursday, May 2nd, 10:30 a.m., St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Ireton, with Reverend Michael Boothby officiating. Burial will follow at Pleasant Hill Cemetery in Ireton. Visitation with the family will begin 5 p.m. today with a prayer service at 7 p.m. at St. Paul's Lutheran Church. The Porter Funeral Home in Ireton is assisting the family. The family prefers memorials be directed to the Orange City Area Hospice or to the St. Paul's Lutheran Church Memorial Fund. Barry William McDougall, age 74, of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, formerly of Lamar's, passed away Sunday, April 28th. Funeral services, Friday, May 3rd, 11 a.m., at the Methodist Church of Lamar's. Burial will follow at the Memorial Cemetery in Lamar's. Visitation, Thursday, May 2nd, will begin at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Maurer Johnson Funeral Home in Lamar's. Family will be present from 5 to 7 p.m. with a prayer service at 7. There will also be 1 hour of visitation at the church prior to the funeral service. Dolores May Visser, that's V-I-S-S-E-R, daughter of Joseph and Carrie Dickman Huck, born September 2, 1929, in rural Melvin, Iowa. She peacefully passed away April 23rd in Sioux City. Funeral services, Saturday, May 4th, 10 a.m. at the Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel in Sioux City. Burial will follow at the East Lawn Cemetery in Sheldon. Visitation will be Friday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel from 5 to 7 p.m. with a prayer service to begin at 7. Dolores's journey through life was marked with love, dedication, and a deep sense of family values. Dolores grew up in the area of her birth until her junior year when the family moved to Sheldon. After graduating from Sheldon High School, she started working as a waitress, where she met her beloved husband, Dirk Dick Visser. Their marriage, May 2, 1949, was the foundation of a beautiful family with three children. Dolores and Dick lived in Sheldon until 1974, when they moved to Sioux City for Dick's job. Dolores's commitment to her loved ones extended beyond the home as she worked at JCPenney department store both in Sheldon and later in Sioux City until her retirement. A compassionate and nurturing individual, Dolores prioritized family above all else. She found joy in hosting family dinners and creating lasting memories with those she held dear. In her leisure time, Dolores enjoyed gardening, knitting, needlepoint, and many other crafts. She cherished moments spent at their cabin in the lakes. She's survived by her children, Deborah Haffitz of Sioux City, David and Tracy Visser of Peoria, Arizona, and Dennis and Robin Visser of Littleton, Colorado. She's also survived by 6 grandchildren, as well as 5 great-grandchildren. Additionally, survived by her sister, Evelyn McCarthy of South Sioux City, Nebraska, along with many nieces and nephews, relatives, and friends. Preceded in death by her parents, her husband, Dirk Dick Visser, 2 sisters, and 2 brothers-in-law. In honoring Dolores' memory, let us celebrate a life well lived, a life dedicated to family bonds and cherished moments that will forever live on in the hearts of those who knew and loved her. And there are no opinions today in the journal, so we'll turn to the Nation and World page. Under Digest, House Democrats vow to save Speaker's job. House Democrats will vote to save Speaker Mike Johnson's job if Republicans seek to remove him from the position, Democratic leaders said Tuesday, likely assuring for now that Johnson will avoid being ousted, like his predecessor, former Representative Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California. Some Republicans criticized Johnson, Republican from Louisiana, for moving forward with aid for Ukraine in a $95 billion emergency spending package that Congress recently passed. Quote, "At this moment, upon completion of our national security work, the time has come to turn the page on this chapter of pro-Putin Republican obstruction," unquote, the top 3 House Democrats, Representatives Hakeem Jeffries, Catherine Clark, and Pete Aguilar, said in a statement. The statement continues, "We will vote to table Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene's motion to vacate the chair. If she invokes the motion, it will not succeed," they said. Our next brief, regulators challenge more patents on drugs. Federal regulators are challenging patents on 20 name brand drugs, or brand name drugs, including the blockbuster weight loss injection Ozempic, in another Biden administration action targeting industry practices that drive up pharmaceutical prices. The Federal Trade Commission sent warning letters to 10 drug makers on Tuesday, taking issue with patents on popular drugs for weight loss, diabetes, asthma, and other conditions. The letters allege certain patents filed by Novo Nordisk, GlaxoSmithKline, AstraZeneca, and 7 other companies are inaccurate or misleading. Drug makers use patents to stave off cheaper generic medicines. Quote, "By filing bogus patent listings, pharma companies block competition and inflate the cost of prescription drugs, forcing Americans to pay sky-high prices for medicines they rely on," said FTC Chair Lina Khan in a statement. In Briefly, a 36-year-old man with a sword attacked members of the public and police officers in a London suburb on Tuesday, killing a 14-year-old boy and injuring four other people before he was subdued and arrested on suspicion of murder, said British authorities. It was not being treated as terror-related or targeted. Our next brief. The Environmental Protection Agency said it finalized a ban on Tuesday on consumer uses of methylene chloride, which is a chemical widely used as a paint stripper, but known to cause health problems. Our next brief. Another six Republican-led states challenged the Biden administration's newly expanded campus sexual assault rules on Tuesday, saying they overstep the president's authority and undermine the Title IX anti-discrimination law. Our next brief. A Delaware judge granted a request on Tuesday by attorneys for Donald Trump and Trump Media and Technology Group, which is parent company of his Truth Social platform, to slow down a lawsuit filed by two co-founders of the company. Our next brief. Eight U.S. newspapers sued ChatGPT maker OpenAI and Microsoft, alleging the technology companies purloined millions of copyrighted news articles without permission or payment to train their artificial intelligence chatbots. In our last brief, former Binance CEO Changpeng Zhao was sentenced Tuesday to 4 months in prison for allowing rampant money laundering on the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange. Our next story, drug agency intends to reclassify marijuana. Sources say the move would place cannabis at a lower designation. This is from the Associated Press. The U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration will move to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug, the Associated Press learned, an historic shift to generations of American drug policy that could have wide ripple effects across the country. The DEA's proposal, which still must be reviewed by the White House Office of Management and Budget, would recognize the medical uses of cannabis and acknowledge it has less potential for abuse than some of the nation's more dangerous drugs. It would not federally legalize marijuana for recreational use. The agency's move, confirmed to the AP on Tuesday by five people familiar with the matter who spoke on condition of anonymity, clears the last significant regulatory hurdle before the agency's biggest policy change in more than 50 years can take effect. Once OMB signs off, the DEA will move marijuana from its current classification as a Schedule I drug alongside heroin and LSD. It moves pot to a Schedule III drug alongside ketamine and some anabolic steroids, following a recommendation from the Federal Health and Human Services Department. In a story on the Trump hush money criminal trial, judge threatens jail time. Court holds the former president in contempt for violating a gag order. Donald Trump was held in contempt of court Tuesday and fined $9,000 for repeatedly violating a gag order that barred him from making public statements about witnesses, jurors, and some others connected to his New York hush money case. If he does it again, the judge warned, he could be jailed. Prosecutors alleged 10 violations, but New York Judge Juan M. Merchan found that there were 9. It was a stinging rebuke of the Republican former president's insistence that he was exercising his free speech rights and a reminder that he is a criminal defendant subject to the harsh realities of trial procedure. This gag order is totally unconstitutional, said Trump as court adjourned. Merchan wrote that he is, quote, keenly aware of and protective of Trump's First Amendment rights, particularly given his candidacy for the office of President of the United States. Still, he warned that the court would not tolerate, quote, willful violations of its lawful orders, and that if necessary and appropriate under the circumstances, it will impose an incarceratory punishment, unquote. Tuesday's ruling came at the start of the second week of testimony in the historic case, in which Manhattan prosecutors argue that Trump and his associates took part in an illegal scheme to influence the 2016 presidential campaign by purchasing and then burying Seamy Stories. The payouts went to a doorman with a torrid yard. Ex-Playboy model Karen McDougal, who had accusations of an affair, and to porn performer Stormy Daniels, who alleged a sexual encounter with Trump, he pleaded not guilty and says the stories are all fake. The judge also announced that he will halt the trial on May 17 to allow Trump to attend his son Barron's high school graduation. In other developments, testimony resumed Tuesday, with Gary Farrow, a banker who helped former Trump attorney Michael Cohen open accounts, including one that Cohen used to buy Daniel's silence. Jurors also began hearing from Keith Davidson, who is a lawyer who represented McDougal and Daniels in their negotiations with the National Enquirer and Cohen. He testified that he arranged a meeting at his Los Angeles office to see whether the tabloid's parent company was interested in McDougal's story. The tabloid eventually bought the story. Even as the deal was signed, Davidson testified that he understood McDougal's story would never be published. Next, students occupy school building. Columbia authorizes police to enter grounds and end protest at hall. This is from the Associated Press. Police took protesters into custody late Tuesday after Columbia University called in police to end the pro-Palestinian occupation on the New York campus. The scene unfolded shortly after 9 p.m. as officers wearing helmets and carrying zip ties and riot shields massed at the Ivy League University's entrance. Officers breached Hamilton Hall, an administration building on campus, to clear out the structure. The demonstrators had occupied the building more than 12 hours earlier, spreading their reach from an encampment elsewhere on the grounds that has been there for nearly 2 weeks. Students defiantly set up tents again after police cleared an encampment at the university on April 18th and arrested more than 100 people. The students were protesting on the Manhattan campus since the prior day, opposing Israeli military action in Gaza and demanding that the school divest from companies they claim are profiting from the conflict. Protests spread to campuses from California to Massachusetts as May commencement ceremonies near, putting added pressure on schools to clear the protesters. Other colleges have sought to negotiate agreements with the demonstrators in the hopes of having peaceful commencement ceremonies. On Columbia's campus, protesters locked arms early Tuesday and carried furniture and metal barricades to Hamilton Hall, which was among several buildings that were occupied during a 1968 civil rights and anti-Vietnam War protest. Demonstrators called the building Heinz Hall, honoring a young girl who was killed in Gaza under Israeli fire. Israel and its supporters branded the university protests as anti-Semitic, while Israel's critics say it uses those allegations to silence opposition. Though some protesters were caught on camera making anti-Semitic remarks or violent threats, organizers of the protests, some of whom are Jewish, say it's a peaceful movement aimed at defending Palestinian rights and protesting the war. Meanwhile, House Republicans on Tuesday announced an investigation into federal funding for universities where students protested. Several House committees will be tasked with a probe that threatens to withhold government support to those universities. Up next, Netanyahu promises to invade Rafah, deal or no. Ceasefire talks with Hamas appear to pick up some momentum. Dateline Tel Aviv. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu pledged on Tuesday to launch an incursion into the southern Gaza city of Rafah, where hundreds of thousands of Palestinians are sheltering from the almost seventh-month-long war, just as ceasefire negotiations between Israel and Hamas militants appears to be gaining steam. Netanyahu's comments came hours before U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was to arrive in Israel to advance the truce talks, which appear to be one of the most serious rounds of negotiations between Israel and Hamas since the war began. The deal is meant to free hostages, bring some relief to the population, and avert an Israeli offensive into Rafah and the potential harm to civilians there. The U.S. has repeatedly said it opposes the Rafah operation until Israel presents a credible plan for evacuating and protecting the estimated 1.5 million people seeking shelter there. Meanwhile, the UN International Court of Justice rejected a request on Tuesday by Nicaragua to order Germany to halt military and other aid to Israel and renew funding to the UN aid agency in Gaza. And turning to the sports page, death brings changes ahead of race. Memories are made at the Kentucky Derby, most of them good, whether cashing a winning ticket, sipping mint juleps, or marveling at the horses. Crowds pack Churchill Downs to experience a bucket list sporting event. Many left last year in tears, anger, and questioning the safety of the sport after 12 horses died at the historic track in the days surrounding the race, including two on Derby Day, when racing enjoys its biggest attendance and highest TV ratings of the year. "You can't ever be too safe when it comes to our sport," said two-time Derby-winning jockey Mike Smith. Deaths occurred at other major racing venues last year, too, in what became a tragic theme for the sport. The number of deaths in the United States increased slightly in 2023 from the year before, according to data tracked by the Equine Injury Database and reported by HISA. HISA said there were 1.32 deaths per 1,000 starts last year. That's up from 1.25 the previous year. The number at the 50 HISA-accredited tracks was 1.23 per 1,000, compared with 1.63 at others across the country. "We're encouraged by that progress," said Lisa Lazarus, who is CEO of HISA. "But we certainly have a whole lot more work to do," she said. A review of 14 horse deaths at Saratoga in upstate New York last summer found no definitive cause for why they happened, although heavy rainfall could have contributed. Investigations by Churchill Downs and HISA, which is the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act, which is the sport's new governing body, did not identify one common cause for the deaths around the Derby. Quote, "When we say that there's not one singular factor that caused the breakdowns, it doesn't mean that we don't know what the risk factors are that contribute to breakdowns," Lazarus said. "Those are things we've been working on very hard." The deaths prompted Churchill Downs to make several changes to its safety program ahead of the 150th Derby on Saturday. The track upgraded equipment used to harrow and grade the dirt surface, with increased testing to measure safety and consistency. The cushion is measured in spots around the track, and moisture content is checked throughout racing days to decide the watering schedule. Quote, "The track is a lot different than it was. It's got more sand in it now, and it's got more base, more cushion," said 88-year-old Hall of Fame trainer D. Wayne Lucas, who saddles Just Steel in the Derby. "It's quite a bit deeper. Horses are getting over it good." Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott, who has the horse Resilience in the Derby, likes Churchill's dirt strip when it's dry. "There's a 40% chance of rain on Derby Day. I don't like it as much when it's wet," he said. "It does not handle water as well as it used to, probably because of a lack of sand in it. Hopefully we get good, normal conditions, and I think we're looking at a good racetrack," he said. The New York Racing Association, which runs the Belmont Stakes, which is racing's third leg of the Triple Crown, is studying the feasibility of adopting all-weather surfaces at tracks nationwide. Churchill Downs added an equine safety and integrity veterinarian to help enforce its rules. 15 vets from the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission joined the track's vet team to observe horses this week before, during, and after training, and in their stalls after they arrive. A new safety management committee comprised of trainers, exercise riders, jockeys, track management, and vets meets weekly to discuss concerns and provide feedback on areas for improvement. all horses racing at Churchill Downs wear stride-safe biometric sensors that detect changes in their gaits to help spot inconsistencies or early signs of a potential developing injury. The track installed a PET unit for diagnostic imaging, which is only the second such machine permanently located at a U.S. racetrack. Realizing the effect last year's death had on the public, the National Thoroughbred Racing Association has launched a national advertising campaign called Safety Runs First to explain what the industry is doing to improve equine safety. NTRA President and CEO Tom Rooney points to HISA as well as investments in new diagnostic technologies, advanced data analytics, and veterinary and track surface protocols as, quote, a testament to our collective dedication to enhancing safety practices within the industry, unquote. HISA took effect in January 2022 to implement national standards for safety at racetracks, replacing the patchwork rules of the 38 racing states. Its anti-doping and medication control program did not start until late May 2023, after last year's Derby and Preakness, where one of the trainer Bob Baffert's horses was injured in a race and was euthanized. Trainer Safi Joseph Jr. was suspended and had his Derby horse scratched ahead of last year's race after the sudden deaths of two of his horses at Churchill Downs. He was reinstated when an investigation showed no wrongdoing on his part. Quote, it proved that we handled things correctly, he said. Why did it happen? We don't know. We don't have answers. It knocks you down, and it's something you carry the rest of your life. We're thankful to be back, he said. Joseph will saddle Longshot, horse named Catalytic, on Saturday. HISA has been dogged by legal challenges from groups of horsemen opposing the new rules and frustration from those eager for national uniform rules in the sport. Still, many see progress being made, even as it's come in fits and starts. It's been a bit sloppy and all over the place, said two-time Derby-winning trainer Doug O'Neill, but I do think the sport has evolved into a safer sport, he said. Smith, who is not participating Saturday, but has ridden in a record 28 derbies, has adjusted to the additional scrutiny. Quote, it's a wonderful, beautiful, beautiful game, but it can also be very dangerous, he said. We certainly need all these protocols. And some baseball briefs around the league. Trout to have surgery for torn meniscus. Los Angeles Angels star Mike Trout will have surgery to repair a torn meniscus in his left knee, sidelining the three-time AL MVP indefinitely. The Angels believe Trout will be able to return this season, said General Manager Perry Minisian, while announcing the injury on Tuesday. Trout is batting .220 with a major league leading 10 homers, 14 RBIs, and 6 stolen bases this year, but he will be sidelined by a major injury for the fourth consecutive season. He had an MRI after playing in the Angels' 6-5 victory over Philadelphia on Monday. The outfielder fought back tears while describing the pain that gradually crept up on him after the game. It's crazy because I look back and I don't even know when I did it, he said. In another brief, the start of Tuesday's game between the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Arizona Diamondbacks at Chase Field had to be delayed after bees swarmed the top of the protective netting directly behind home plate. That's super scary, and that's all the time we have. For today's reading of the Sioux City Journal, for Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. I'm your reader, Mary Francis, and you've been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. All material heard on IRIS intended solely for our friends with print disabilities. You can check out podcasts and announcements and information about when we'll be doing audio description at a theater near you. All of that's on our website, which is iowaradioreading.org. Happy May Day and have a great day.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay!
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing, it really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.